I'm Korva Coleman, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, another in our series of conversations called What Now? We ask our guests to discuss what it might mean to the country to have an African-American president. Today, does Barack Obama have a special responsibility to African-Americans, and if so, what? But first, heavy fighting resumed this past summer in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. 250,000 people have fled their homes, crowded into refugee camps, and hidden in the forests. There are more than 17,000 United Nations peacekeepers in Congo. Last week, the UN Security Council approved another 3,000 peacekeepers for this area, making it the largest such effort in the world. Congo is a large country with nearly a million square miles. It is one quarter of the size of the United States. 22 armed groups are fighting each other in Congo, and their reasons for doing so are complex. Here to help us understand the conflicts are NPR's East Africa correspondent Gwen Tompkins. She joins us from Congo, and Georgette Gagnon, the Africa director of Human Rights Watch. She is in our New York studios. First to Gwen. Gwen, you are in Goma in eastern Congo in the provincial capital there. Last month, the town was about to be overwhelmed by rebels. What's it like now?
Well, Korva, Goma appears to have revived itself. I mean, you're right, just 3 weeks ago, the city was at a standstill. The rebels were at the threshold. The army had rampaged through in an inelegant retreat. They were looting and shooting, and all the businesses were closed. You know, the streets, which are, you know, covered in black lava rocks and potholes, they were really quiet. But now, you know, there are vehicles on the streets. Goma's gang of motorcycle taxis is back in full force. You know, folks are selling bananas and cell phone minutes and all sorts of other commodities on the streets. And there's plenty of foot traffic, you know, as the children go to school and people are on their way to do whatever they're doing during the day. But when you talk to people, Korva, and when you look closely at them, you really notice uneasiness. The overwhelming majority of people are not that far from going hungry. And, you know, as you said, the front line is just a few miles away.
Are the refugee camps full? Are they safe?
Yes and no. Yes, they are full, and no, they are not safe. You know, the camps are teeming with people. You know, as you mentioned in your introduction, I mean, 250,000 people were put on the road by fighting over the past 3 months, and they are not comfortable where they are. These are extremely difficult places to live, you know, these camps for internally displaced people. They're not sanitary. The people often find themselves vulnerable to violence perpetrated by the Congolese army because many of the soldiers come looting through, rampaging through, stealing things, hurting people. And so, you know, the folks are truly at the mercy of anyone who passes by, whether it be a Congolese army soldier, whether it be an aid worker, whether it be the United Nations, or whether it be, you know, journalists or any other member of the international community who's just trying to see what's going on.
Georgette Gagnon of the Human Rights Watch, who are the key players in this Congolese conflict?
This most recent fighting is being done by a rebel commander named Laurent Nkunda, who is a Tutsi who was in the Rwandan army years ago. So he is challenging the authority of the government of Congo, now led by Joseph Kabila. And those are the main two fighters. The third party is pro-government militias that are fighting sometimes alongside with the Congolese army, sometimes on their own, known as Mai Mai. And Gwen is absolutely right that the Congolese army is also behaving extremely badly, looting, pillaging. Their command and control structure has broken down. So, of course, civilians, ordinary Congolese, are absolutely caught in the middle of all these groups of fighters. There's no law and order. It's really a very tough situation. The lack of food, the lack of health care is very, very, very high, and the humanitarian organizations are absolutely crying out for more security so they can deliver food and water to people.
Georgette Gagnon, if the government of Congo, headed by President Joseph Kabila, is attacking its own people, should other governments reconsider support for him?
Well, the issue is really whether the peacekeepers can provide enough security so that people are safe and aren't being subject to, attacks by renegade Congolese soldiers, Mai-Mai militias, whomever. As you said, the UN Security Council has authorized 3,000 more troops to go. The issue is, how fast can they get on the ground? Where are these troops going to come from? In the meantime, there are hundreds of thousands of acts of violence every day with consequent suffering.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Korva Coleman, and I'm speaking with NPR's East Africa correspondent Gwen Tompkins and Georgette Gagnon, Africa Director for Human Rights Watch, about the current situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Gwen, former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo is the United Nations Special Peace Envoy to this region, and he's pressing for talks between Laurent Nkunda, the rebel leader, and the president of Congo. What about the prospects for this?
At this point, no one has agreed to direct negotiations, but then no one has not agreed to direct negotiations. What Obasanjo is saying is that, from speaking with President Joseph Kabila, the president has he's not shown great enthusiasm to talk with Mr. Nkunda, General Nkunda, but at the same time, he did not say no. General Nkunda has always pressed for direct talks with the government. In fact, that's one of the pillars of his campaign, that he wants to find himself in a position of power after this campaign is over. When I spoke with him a few weeks ago, he said that he would accept a position in government if one was offered to him. But then, as a rebel leader, he also retains the right to overthrow the government if it doesn't play ball with him. So, the special envoy, Obasanjo, has a very difficult job on his hands in terms of convincing both men that this is worth their while and that actually an agreement can come from these negotiations that would be satisfactory to both men and also that bring about some form of stability to this region, which has just been so racked by violence for so many years.
Georgia, Congo has several neighbors: Angola, Sudan, Rwanda. How important are their leaders, especially Rwanda, in establishing peace in Congo?
Critical. Rwanda is very much seen to be a supporter of Nkunda's forces, and they have been a key player in the region in bringing and not bringing stability to the region since the genocide in 1994 in Rwanda. So they must be brought into the negotiations in some form or another. The other key player is another rebel group known as the FDLR, which also includes some Rwandan genocidaire, and they have been active in the Congo in seeking access to mineral wealth, which is also, of course, fueling the conflict. So the FDLR have to be dealt with as well.
Gwen, do other countries have ulterior motives in prolonging conflict in Congo?
Well, it's important to realize that Eastern Congo is a real treasure chest when it comes to mineral wealth. There's gold here, there's cassiterite, there's coltan, and these minerals are extremely valuable on the world market. Now, because Eastern Congo is in such disarray, it is very easy for people who want to get these minerals out of the country, to get them out without paying taxes, to get them out, without anyone really noticing, in the cover of night or in airplanes or over Lake Kivu. On one side of the lake is Congo, on the other side of the lake is Rwanda. So there are neighbors of Eastern Congo who are benefiting from this illegal mineral trade. So a very critical question will be, how can you create a carrot that is sweet enough for these other countries to be interested in actually finding peace in Eastern Congo, when in fact they are benefiting so handsomely from the discord here?
Georgette, what are the stakes in Congo if this situation deteriorates?
Our concern is that the forces of Nkunda may actually attack Goma or take Goma, that there will be continued low-level conflict outside of Goma. That's still going on a daily basis. Also, we're concerned if there's continuing insecurity, the humanitarian situation, people's access to food and health care will just get worse and worse and worse. And of course, your listeners may know there's an extremely high level of sexual violence in the DRC, and women and girls are subject to all kinds of sexual abuse, rape, attacks by all these different groups and armed men, and there's absolutely no remedy for that at the moment. There's very little judicial process in place. So, our concern is that the situation will just continue to deteriorate for the millions of people living there trying to live a normal life and just survive on a daily basis.
Gwen, is there a possibility this could even blow up into a regional war?
Well, that possibility always exists. There's a growing sort of animosity among some ethnic groups, the Hutus who are living in Congo, for instance, and the Tutsis who are living in Congo. So you have a situation where you have, very volatile feelings. You have a general sense of victimization across ethnic lines, and you have a history of violence between these two ethnic groups. And so the possibility that there could be an explosion down the road is very real.
NPR's East Africa correspondent Gwen Tomkus joined us by phone from Congo. Georgette Gagnon is the Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. She joined us from our New York studios. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.